47. A Game Well Played. Mr. Socrates watched from the beach with a sense of pleasure and confidence as the HMS Shah sent a barrage of shells towards the Crystal Palace. The first phase had unfolded with relative ease, and this second phase had gone equally well. The ship's doctor had assured him that the two wounded dragoons would live, but five of the Association soldiers and three Marines were dead. In exchange, the enemy forces had been scattered and a collection of prisoners had been taken on a boat back to the HMS Shah for questioning. The enemy's guns and airships had been destroyed. Typhon, the odd, monstrous creature, was dead. Mr. Socrates had inspected the corpse himself. Impressive, that one. He had not seen Modo and Octavia yet, but he was convinced they'd soon emerge from the tunnels. The only detail that irked him was the Crystal Palace itself. From a distance, it had looked like one shot from the Shah's 9-inch muzzle loaders would shatter it, but apparently not. So it couldn't be glass. It was some sort of impervious material, thick enough to withstand their heaviest guns. Through his spyglass, he could see that they'd succeeded in breaking off a few chips, but it seemed structurally sound. An astounding architectural feat. They had scored one direct hit at the top of the building, shearing off the airship landing tower. At least they could be sure their enemies wouldn't be fleeing that way. In short order, his snipers silenced the last of the rifle fire. Now the enemy could only retreat to the palace. They'd be trapped in their shell. How to bust the shell open was the problem. He hadn't counted on a siege. He had enough supplies for a week, but there might be months of supplies stored away inside those walls. A siege would require that he got a message back to Esquimalt, and it would be weeks before reinforcements arrived. He raised his hand, sending a signal to one of his lieutenants, who in turn made a sign to a flagman on the beach who waved, "Cease fire." The Shah's guns fell silent. Mr. Socrates stepped out from his cover. Only a gifted marksman could hit him at this distance from the palace. It was worth the risk. He raised his speaking trumpet and shouted, "Clockwork Guild agents, it would be best for all concerned if you were to surrender now." The Crystal Palace was quiet. The quartz was clear, but he couldn't actually see inside. Tharpa stood a few yards behind him, his rifle trained on possible sniper nests. "It would be best for all concerned if you surrender," a woman answered, using an even louder speaking trumpet. There was no way to detect her actual location, other than the general direction of the palace. He knew her voice, of course. Miss Hakandottir. He'd hoped a shell or a bullet had removed her from this earth, but, alas, no such luck. "Ingrid, how lovely to hear your voice again." His trumpet made him feel as though he could blow their walls down by merely speaking. "Your Swedish accent is a joy to my ears." "Ha! Intelligence has failed you. This is what comes of mediocre agents," she retorted. "I'm Icelandic." He was amused. Had his sources actually been so far off? "Are we to settle this with swords again?" he asked. "It would be less than gentlemanly of me to duel with such a doddering old fool." "Enough," he snapped. "I will address your master."
"I am the master of all you see," she replied.
"No," Mr. Socrates said. "You are not capable of such visionary thinking. Send him out. Ingrid, I'm growing tired of this charade, and it's such a lovely palace. Do not force us to destroy it and all who remain inside." He expected her to shout a defiant answer or take a shot at him. Instead, a male voice spoke into the trumpet. "You have done well, Alan Reeve," he said. "I salute you. A clever plan, executed with great precision." "With whom am I speaking?"
"You may call me Prometheus."
His tone was flat, disinterested. He'd named himself after a Titan. Was the man mad? Of course, Mr. Socrates himself had taken on a last name of distinction, but that was only to hide his past. This man, on the other hand, might well believe himself to be a Titan. "Well, Prometheus, I also salute you. Let us chat, shall we? Face to face, over tea and sweet biscuits, on the deck of my ship. I have analyzed our situation, and there is no other choice for us but surrender."
It was a game well played. I shall open the gates for you conquering heroes.
Immediately the main doors at the front of the palace began to part. The dragoons raised their elephant guns. The soldiers and marines raised their rifles. It was still dark inside the palace, but something large was sliding out.
"It is an offering of surrender," the man said,
a smile now in his voice. About a dozen guild soldiers were heaving against a giant wooden crate, rolling it across wooden poles towards them. What odd sort of gesture was this? How was this a surrender? The rolling crate slowly descended the paved road from the palace. It had air holes and was so large that it easily could contain 20 horses. Horses. The Trojan horse.
"Fire! Fire at the crate!"
he commanded, and his men obeyed. The guild soldiers stopped and fled back into the palace, and the gates slammed shut after them. The box collapsed, revealing 5 monstrous hulking men, eyes dead. Each was much larger than Typhon, and they had been redesigned more than Mr. Socrates had dreamed possible. One had 4 arms, another had large horns, a third had 10-foot-long tentacles. The final creature was part metal and part human, plate armor fastened like scales to his flesh. His arms were clearly steam-powered, ending in huge crab-like claws. The machines of war, the cannons and Maxim guns that tore men apart, were civilized compared to these creatures. Their appearance shook him to the core. There was something else. A small wave of silver ran across the ground in front of the monsters. He squinted. Metal spiders. He retreated behind their barricade and took stock of his soldiers. Behind their helmets, the dragoons were hard to read, but helmetless trooper Entwistle was staring, wide-eyed. The association soldiers and the marines fired automatically, but he knew they had to be unnerved. They'd faced cavalry charges and cannon fire, but none had seen an enemy as terrible as this. It was too late to call down a barrage. It would hit his own men, too. That could only be a final option. One of the signalers ran screaming onto the beach and into the water. Mr. Socrates thought of Sun Tzu and his art of war. "He who knows when he can fight and when he cannot will be victorious." Was it time to flee? They could be off this beach and back in the boats in minutes, leaving only a few to cover their retreat. Those men would die, undoubtedly. No. They had not sacrificed this much, only to be driven back. This is what the Guild had created, what they ultimately wanted to unleash upon Britain. Their new ships would make the invasion possible, carrying these beasts across the Pacific. Sun Tzu had also said, "Look on them as your own beloved sons, and they will stand by you even unto death."
"Hold your positions," he commanded. "I'm right here, men, standing beside you."
The monsters began lumbering towards them, but first 100 little spiders scurried over the lip of their trenches and up the legs and arms of the men and began biting. Most of the marines shook them off, but one cried out when he felt the bite, then fell over. After a few short convulsions, he was dead. Poison. The other soldiers were quick to smash at the spiders with the butts of their guns, but one ran up a dragoon's leg, found flesh, and the dragoon fell over, waving his arms and thrashing around. 4 sailors fled into the water. Mr. Socrates couldn't blame them. They might have held their position if they'd been on a ship, but not here, faced with something so outside their understanding. He, too, felt an overpowering revulsion at the melding of human and animal parts, metal and gears. It took a full minute of stomping and crushing to kill the spiders. By then, the monstrous squadron was nearly upon them. The elephant guns only slowed the beasts down. Nothing could stop them. And they wouldn't die. They just would not die. They were already dead.